Today's show is sponsored by Brush. Brush is an electric toothbrush that will change the way you think about brushing your teeth. With powerful sonic technology and ultra-gentle bristles, the Brush redefines what it means to have super clean teeth. It's like that feeling when you just leave the dentist. A fresh whole mouth clean every single day. Our listeners get 15% off their total purchase with code POD15. Follow the link in our show notes at timespentpoorly.com and enter the code POD15 to get your exclusive discount and upgrade your oral care routine today.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Time Spent Poorly Show with your hosts, Eduardo and Brother Ron. Here's a quick clip from tonight's show to whet your appetite.
My stepdad, one of his favorite movies is Under Siege. And I could never figure out for the longest time why he liked it the way that it did. Because it's just Tommy Lee Jones and Gary Busey chewing scenery while Steven Seagal pretends to fight people. And then I was watching these little retrospective things discussing the movies, and I was like, oh, that's exactly why it's enjoyable. It's because you've got Tommy Lee Jones and Gary Busey taking turns pretending who can chew the most scenery.
Oh, yeah.
And you have ponytailed, fat-ass, useless Steven Seagal pretending to be a badass.
Wow, this really sounds like it's going to be the best show, better than anyone we've done before or anything we can do afterward in the history of the program. You mark my words. We know there's all sorts of better ways you can be spending your time, so thanks for spending yours, albeit poorly, with us. If you want to learn more about who we are, go to timespentpoorly.com. Everything you need to know, whether it's accessing past episodes, future live broadcasts, or other shows on our network, it's all right there. There's also a link to our Patreon if you find yourself compelled to support one of your favorite shows, hosted by any of these nobodies from the Pacific Northwest. Well, gentlemen, I'm not here, but you are, so let's get it on! Without further delay, please welcome your hosts, Eduardo and Brother Ron.
So let's get on to some of our topics.
Yeah, what are we...
We're going to Chad Daniels
Chad
in a
Daniels
couple weeks.
In a couple weeks. That'll be fun.
Yeah, you and I actually are...
And I...
Will be there.
We booked our room at the Ruby.
As well?
Here just 2 or 3 days ago.
Nice.
So, yeah, we'll be staying at the same hotel, which means we can drink in the... I think it's called the Sapphire Lounge.
I think you're right, yeah.
It's a nice little bar. Have you ever been there?
No. We didn't actually go to the bar the last time.
It's really, really nice. It's really nice.
So with your tickets, did you buy like the deluxe deal with it, with the dinner and everything too?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I just...
I think I ended up buying that.
It basically equates to the same amount in terms of dollars spent, but the only difference is I buy my tickets, I go, I get seated, I buy what I want to buy. You have your tickets, you go get seated, you have these, well, we've got one of these and one of these, so I want one of these and one of these kind of things.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's really not any different. Because you still have, they still have, I think, a 2-item minimum.
Yeah. I've only been there the one other time. For a show a few years ago now,
I've been there three.
And the first time we went, we bought like the VIP package that got us like right up on top of the stage, which was kind of cool.
Yeah,
I don't think that was available when I bought these Chad Daniels ones, but
they were sold out.
Yeah,
yeah.
But no, I'm excited about going to that show. That's been something I've been looking forward to. I've always liked Chad. Like, well, not always, but he's one I've watched for a few years now.
I've been a fan since I first heard him.
Right. Yeah, I can't remember. I think I actually was recommended it by a person that's been a guest on the show. And so I checked him out and I was like, oh, this guy is like right up my alley. And as a parent, I think you can relate to a lot of like the comedy that he's delivering.
Very.
And so I ended up showing it to my wife, and she was like, oh, I like this.
Yeah, he has very...
He's now divorced.
Very, very relatable stuff. And he delivers it in a way that is, it rewards you for listening. He does a lot of really subtle wordplay where he'll, you know, call back to things and
right,
you know,
right.
that kind of stuff. He's not as vulgar as like I've seen Tom Segura a couple times. He's kind of more vulgar than John Mulaney, but less than Tom Segura
or even a Louis C.K.
Which yeah.
He's within their vein, but he's got kind of almost a slightly more universal Curb appeal to him in terms of being like
my wife.
Like Louis C.K. fine, but she can get on board with a...
There's...
Chad Daniels a little bit easier.
Even I, there's some Louis C.K. stuff that I am like, man, I don't want to say that Cross is trying too hard, but it's just a little...
Yeah.
Vulgar for vulgar's sake, if that makes sense.
No, yeah, I could see that. Let's see.
And I'm not a huge fan of that.
Matthew asks if he can watch Chad Daniels. I would let my kids watch.
Yeah.
And then I'd look at him and be like, see?
Just remember what you can watch and what you can repeat. That's all I ask. His thing about holding the press conference for his kids. Only allowing them to ask a certain number of questions per day. I wish I would have thought of that. Today, Tori had to work day shift, and so I was hanging out with her daughter and my daughter and her former stepdaughter. So I had three little girls between the ages of 7 and just almost 4.
Oh, wow.
And holy shit. It was this constant revolving door of like, one of them was minding their own business. One of them was pitching a fit. One of them was coming to tattle to me. And it was never the same ones twice in a row. Yep. It was just this, like I said, revolving door of like, well, she said this. Well, she doesn't want to do this. Well, and every time there's one of them that's just being this peaceful little angel, and you just want to look at the other two and be like her.
Yeah. Well, and I can't imagine, like, somewhere along the line, like, the wisdom that you try to impart bites you in the ass because it turns into a tattle of some kind. And then...
the hardest fucking thing to deal with is... they will tattle, and it is a genuine roll of the dice of, you know what?
Well, they
fuck off. You don't need to be in here for this.
Right.
And oh shit. Thank you for telling me that. I'm coming.
Right.
And
the expectation on their end is every time that you... is that you're going to take whoever they've told on out and stone them.
They have no ability to gauge how important it is.
Right.
They automatically think that if they come to you and say, hey, so-and-so did this, you're going to, again, as you said, like you're going to
publicly Billy's standing on the deck. Them.
Yeah.
Because at one time you said, let's not stand here because you're going to get, like, the sun's going to burn you or something like that. Something... just benign, but then it's Billy standing on the deck. I told him not to stand on the deck. He told me I don't care.
This morning, I was getting dressed. I was putting my contacts in, putting my clothes on, just getting myself together. And in the short span of minutes that it took for this to occur, the three girls were supposed to be, hey, okay, each of you has your own little Kindle tablet. Find a game on your Kindle tablet, play it. I'm going to get myself dressed, put my contacts in, get myself together, get my stuff loaded into the car, and then we'll get you guys all together, and away we go. This is it, that's your task. In that time, I had one of them say, "You're not playing on the tablet. Why aren't you playing on the tablet?" The other one responds, "You're not supposed to tell me what to do." The other one responds, The third one, who's not involved in any of this, comes running to me. And
Oh, yeah, no, if I have two kids in a fight, the other one is, like, popping popcorn. They're like that Michael Jackson meme where it's like...
It's hanging out with one kid can be taxing. Hanging out with two kids can be relatively easy because they entertain each other. When you add that third wheel into the group,
yeah,
it becomes a full-blown fucking thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's hilarious. It's consistent.
Consistent's a word. Yeah, for sure. Oscars.
But Oscars.
Hated them.
Yeah, turned it off.
I don't think
have
there's
to, have
been...
to empty my bladder, and that says about all I have to say about the Oscars. No,
I don't think there's a show and Oscars that I've watched that's been less entertaining than that one.
Why did they spend slash devote so much time to these little anecdotes about all the nominees?
Oh, all the like little side stories about where they got their starts and
yeah,
all that extra nonsense that I don't care. Like, I feel like they're trying to do, I don't know what they're trying to do, but it's
when they said that they were going to remove the performances, because they made a thing about how they were going to remove the performances of the best song nominees from the show this year. And
okay, and that's an okay good, because I don't care about that.
I took that to mean that they were like trying to shorten
the length
things up as a way of like, hey, we can't get people to watch 3 hours, so maybe if we tighten it up.
It was still 3 hours.
Yeah. And you had overlong speeches, of which, admittedly, I didn't watch many because I turned it the fuck off.
I don't know.
It was boring.
I did not know any. Like, I knew a few of the people that they'd get up there talking. Riz Ahmed.
Yeah.
I learned he's British.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I took away from that. I was like, oh, that guy's British.
I had no idea. I knew he was British, but exactly.
That's the only takeaway I had from it. Did you get to Harrison Ford's?
No.
Oh man. Either boy is getting old and tired, and I think he's getting old and tired, but man, it was tough to get through.
They're supposed to be
another fifth Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
It's going to be. Like,
how he does with that.
People talked about that one, or like the fourth one, like worried about his stability in that one. This one might be.
Because he had a hard actually, time with it. I can only imagine how this
Well, he broke his ankle in Star Wars. He came up and delivered a thing, and I just got the general sense that he was... Like, you know, you watch Harrison Ford and you think like, oh, I'm not interested in being here. Or you think he's not interested in being there. I didn't think he was disinterested in being there, but I almost felt like he was unprepared to be there. Like, okay. He was handed a sheet of paper to read something.
Here, go.
And so I think like he was given stuff like liner notes or whatever
I've seen him in things where he very visibly...
Yeah.
Checked the fuck out.
Oh, yeah. There's movies that he's like not there for.
Yeah.
You know,
I've only watched
American Graffiti a few times. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Or any appearance on Conan. But some of that's staged. But
well, I think they lean
for theatrical effect. They lean into it. Yeah.
It's not that far from the truth.
No.
I don't think.
But then he goes and he does something like Call of the Wild.
Yeah.
Where he plays this heartwarming character that you... did you watch that movie? It's okay. Except when he dies...
Wasn't...
The dog lays really there interested. Next to his dead body for a period of time. And I remember doing like MST3K... commentary on it with my kids at the theater.
Yeah.
I'm like, he's going to become a pile of bones there. Because he just died in the grass somewhere. I'm like, he will be a pile of bones. That dog can't bury it. That dog's not going to bury him. It's not going to give him a proper burial.
The dog's going to stay there until he starts getting completely famished, and then he's going to feast on his dead body.
Yeah.
He's been abandoned.
That's what I said that too. I go, that dog is going to get hungry.
Dogs don't leave their owners. And when their owner dies, they just stay there and hang around until the ferality sets in.
Right. Yeah. He'll eat him. And the first thing he'll eat is the face.
No, I did. Let's see.
I didn't even make it to the memoriam, and I guess they actually got it right for once.
I haven't watched it yet. I heard mixed things. I heard that they screwed that up too.
Well, they have for several years now. Like I hear they memorialized this person and he was asshole, they missed these seven people.
There's always complaints about who they cover and who they miss.
Right, from or this guy was a nobody. And
Steven Soderbergh directed, and I am waving those quote marks up there big time because I don't know.
He directed the In Memoriam?
Direction. No, he directed the Oscars. And I've seen a couple articles. You feel free to look them up later if you're interested. But yeah. The premise of it was that Soderbergh was directing the Oscars and they knew that it was going to be a limited capacity venue. And so they really wanted to make it quote unquote feel like a movie. Spoke to presenters and other people that were coordinating the show and really tried to like emphasize to them to like try and like organically like build a moment. Like, you know, blah, blah, blah. And this is why they moved the best picture, best actor, best actress reveals around. They always do best picture last. That's what they closed the show on.
Yeah.
Well, this year, because everybody was pretty much locked that Nomadland was going to win best picture...
And they did. Have you watched it?
No,
I'm not
interested. I feel like a snob saying it because of how much I like movies and how much I like watching movies, but the premise of it doesn't interest me. It mm-hmm. doesn't sound interesting.
There was nothing there. I felt like there was zero movies of consequence to me this year. Even the Trial of the Seven, while I enjoyed it,
that was good.
It was a good movie, but it's like, you know,
it's not what I think of when I think of the Oscars.
When I think of the Oscars, I think of The Revenant. In recent years, I'm thinking like The Revenant, Departed. Yeah, just Leonardo DiCaprio movies. But no, but in a way though, because we had such a string of like Clooney, Pitt,
you know what
Leonardo DiCaprio.
I think of three movies. I think of Titanic. I think of Gladiator, and I think of Braveheart.
Those are good. Yeah, those are good callbacks.
Epic, Hollywood,
Saving Private Ryan.
They have that appeal to blowing Hollywood that Hollywood likes for their movies.
Right.
But they have this grandiose story, this grandiose budget. They're spectacles.
Or here's another one that's not to be like, and all the Tom Hanks movies, but Road to Perdition was another one.
Apollo 13.
Apollo 13.
I don't know that I would put Road to Perdition on there, honestly. Like, it fits some of the criteria, but there are others that I would put in front of it, like L.A. Confidential, maybe.
Was 1917, did it come out in time for last year's Oscars?
Yeah.
So it was part of the mm-hmm. year before's Oscars.
Yeah.
I see that as being one that would have fit into the typical Oscar fold.
It was a Christopher Nolan movie that fit into that mold, if that makes sense.
Tenet?
No, 1917.
He didn't do 1917. What are you saying?
I mean the feeling of it.
Oh,
it was,
yeah, yeah.
It was one of those immersive.
Right.
Like, see this on the biggest screen possible.
Yeah, you have to feel it. And like my wife felt it easily because she got sick and went to the
Hollywood feel.
Right.
What I'm talking about with like the Gladiator and the Braveheart and it, where there's
sure.
Because there's barely
the Gone with the Windish type.
Yeah, there's barely a lead character in 1917. It's basically just a lot of set pieces.
That's true.
And it's more about Christopher Nolan really does a good job of encapsulating the theatrical experience, but he doesn't do it from the character theatrical experience. It's more of the just visual bombastic sound and that kind of thing. But the movies that were nominated for Best Picture this year,
I haven't watched I can watch all because Eduardo has all the streaming services.
Yes.
There's not one on there I don't think that I can't watch without I could watch them all with my paid service, and I've watched The Trial of the Sevens. I think the only one I've watched. Sound of Metal I can watch. Nomadland I can watch.
To be fair,
Sound of Metal looks intriguing.
I really want to watch Sound of Metal.
And I would like to.
I haven't gotten around to it yet, but I actually do want to watch it.
Well, and I think
Nomadland and
Nomadland I'll make time for because there's well, I'll tell you why though. Every Oscar season, I always end up being pissy because a certain, usually a movie or a actor or somebody wins that I'm like, yeah, but I don't know. And so then I end up watching whatever.
Yeah.
To see if I can get on board with it. And half the time I can't, but you know, there was like about 5 or 6 years where it was the George Clooney. The Oscars belonged to Clooney and like Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
And then it was like I never met Damon, but they always went and did like they were doing like the Oceans movies together. And then they always had their little Oscar.
Yeah. Their Oscar bait.
Their Oscar bait shit going on too. And then this year just didn't feel like I would have just appreciated some kind of familiarity to it. And it was almost like they were trying to distance themselves from any of that familiar feeling because it has ties to Weinstein.
Yeah.
Two, it has ties to this idea that Hollywood is somewhat above everyone else. But this actually felt this almost felt like it made it worse.
Well, so
because it felt like before it felt like Hollywood was I would have almost liked to see like Billy Crystal host the Oscars again. And even those got hard to watch.
So
when he'd come back and do them,
their plan was they switched up the releases for Best Picture, Best Actress and Best Actor. Uh-huh. Because and this is all conjecture, speculation, whatever you want to call it. But the idea was that most people were confident that Nomadland and Chloe Zhao were going to win Best Picture. It was like a 80-20 split on whether Frances McDormand or Carey Mulligan were going to win Best Actress.
Who ended up winning?
Frances McDormand.
Did she? Yeah. Oh, okay.
The idea was, and this is just what I've seen on the internet, so who knows if people are actually just trying to get clickbait or if it's real or not.
Right, right.
But the idea was that because the pickings were so slim and because he had died in such a heroic and tragic fashion that they would rearrange the releasing of the awards so that they would do Best Picture and then Best Actress and then Best Actor because they were going to posthumously give Chadwick Boseman the Best Actor trophy.
Did he get it?
No, he did not.
See, this is, I didn't finish the Oscar.
And here is where the funny bit comes in. Because this is why the Oscars turned into a big wet fart of an ending.
Love it.
So they give the Best Picture award to the movie that everybody thinks is going to win. They follow it up by giving the Best Actress award to Frances McDormand, who with this win has won it two times in the last 3 years. So she gives a very brief speech.
Oh, she won Three Billboards, right?
Yeah. And then they close out the show by giving the award for Best Actor to Anthony Hopkins.
Oh, right. Yeah, I did see that.
Who is not at the ceremony because he's 83 years old and not vaccinated and doesn't want to run the risk of getting COVID. So their entire plan is to restructure the ending of the Oscars to have this big, grand, beautiful moment where they honor Chadwick Boseman's career and how amazing of an actor he was. Because, to be fair, dude was really talented.
In a short period of time.
The fact that he died the way that he did is a real, genuine shame. And the director, Steven Soderbergh, and all the people who were doing the Oscars were so certain that he was going to be a lock.
Holy cow.
That instead of having this beautiful moment, they have the movie everybody knew was going to win, the actress who won her second time in 3 years who was just like, yeah, thanks, and nobody there to accept the award, so they just said, yeah, we're here to accept the award on his behalf. End of show.
Wow.
Yeah. It. Whoops.
Anticlimactic. Whoops. Wow.
Yeah.
Was Hopkins even on tape?
They released his video the next day.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
He released his acceptance speech the next day.
After they woke him up.
Yeah.
Got him out of bed.
Yeah.
Hey.
Hey, by the way, you won.
You won an Oscar. Well, has he won one before?
Well, he won for supporting actor for
Silence
of the Lambs. I don't know that he's ever won Best Actor.
That's though, an Oscar is an Oscar, though, but at a certain point.
It was just so funny to me that.
That is crazy.
They had this whole build and it just utterly shit the bed.
So what would a Chadwick Boseman posthumous acceptance speech even look like?
Apparently his wife was going to come up and accept it in his place.
Oh.
It would have been a really touching moment. And instead the Oscars viewership was down from 23 million last year to roughly 10 million this year.
That's just because of the COVID deaths though, right?
Well, yeah, there's nobody's alive to watch the Oscars right. anymore.
All the COVID deaths.
I turned it off when they were talking about the nominees for Best Adapted Screenplay. And Regina King, God bless her, she was fucking great in Watchmen. She's a great actress. I love her.
Not a good opening host.
She's fantastic. But the way that it was all set and the fact that there was no music behind her.
Yeah.
And it was just her talking. And it was the most dreadfully flat, boring.
The whole thing was fucking boring.
Yeah. Could not give a shit.
I fell asleep before, like I said, before we got to the In Memoriam.
I don't find that hard to believe.
And yeah. I wanted to at least, and there were points where I was awake enough to be like, no, I don't want to hear this guy. So I'd like fast forward, like do the tap forward, like 15 seconds or whatever.
15 second skip, yeah.
I'm like, no. And then, but they'd still like, there were people that were up there, just their acceptance speeches were remarkably long.
The guy that won.
And why were we putting all these foreign language films at the, like they front loaded with foreign language.
They front load it so that you'll watch.
Yeah, it's not good.
Because they have to. But the dude that won for...
didn't they used to do
it? It's supposed to be a great movie, and I love Mads Mikkelsen. But
I know what you're talking about. Language, yeah.
That dude's speech, that was the first time. And that was the second award that they showed.
Yeah.
And that was the first time that I got up and walked out of the room. I was watching it with my mom. She and I were both eating dinner. And I got up to go make myself a drink. Because I was like, well,
That's another show. Like, you would talk about, like, that's one where... Do you remember when you would actually like watching that with your parents? Do you ever have a moment, like a memory from when you were younger where you'd watch the Oscars with your parents?
My parents didn't. I watched them without my parents.
There were a couple times when I was growing up where I would actually watch them with my parents. And then even into like my young adulthood, I would watch them. And then at a certain point, like they just like this was the worst one.
I've watched it from a young age,
and right?
So you've seen
its evolution,
yeah.
And obviously, I mean, it has to evolve to some degree. But like there was, like they took all like any amount of what could be, like somebody said, let's make it funny, and they're like, no, let's make it not at all.
Let's inject no humor into the show.
Let's take ourselves super fucking seriously.
As flat and serious as possible. We are giving out awards and they will be respected.
And people are dying of COVID. I feel like that's part of what the whole idea behind it is like we need to.
It was.
Yeah, I don't know. It was.
As I said earlier, for a show that is notoriously. Boring, because I'll say
even when they inject the humor, it's boring.
Yeah,
but like at this point, they're like you watch it, it's like watching the Super Bowl, where you're like, I wonder if they're gonna have any funny commercials.
You want to see if there's gonna be anything interesting that happens. If you're somebody who cares about the movies, who like I used to. Up until, I want to say 3 years ago, it might have been only 2 years ago, I used to make it a point to watch every Best Picture nominee.
We would do that.
Just to see.
We would do that. And that's why I said.
The Artist.
I didn't watch The Artist.
Just to see. It wasn't bad. It was actually kind of funny, honestly. Like,
yeah.
It had some really genuinely, like, funny moments.
There was a year, like, though, like a few years back, where we watched every Best Picture nominee.
And that made it
easier for me to be like, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
Or I don't get it.
Yeah.
Or, you know.
This year didn't help because, as you said, with the pandemic and... everything, which I don't understand.
I almost feel like it was calculated to be like sensitive to whatever that is.
I don't understand the lack of Oscar bait movies when it comes to the pandemic, because Oscar bait movies aren't blockbusters.
Yeah, they're the...
So, should we have missed out on Black Widow and Fast and the Furious 9 because the theaters were closed? Yeah. They're theater movies. Should we have missed out on Kate Winslet and Saoirse Ronan's lesbian 17th century period drama, Ammonite? Nope.
Was that an Oscar nomination?
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it was.
Had no idea.
Yep. Surprise. Like I said, I pay attention to them because I do. And...
Yeah, no, I mean...
Just, who the fuck cares?
Honestly, re-listening to our last episode was more entertaining than... Well, I mean, it wouldn't be... it's not a stretch. I'm sorry. We're better than the Oscars. The Time Spent Poorly show is better than the fucking Oscars.
I would like to think so.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, we're not better than.
What's that?
Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Oh, no shit. By the way, call back to a previous episode. I was doing some editing today on the back half of our last episode, and I found out. Well, and I shared this information with you guys because we were watching. If you go back to our previous episode, I'm going to do this more often, especially because I don't know that people listen the full way through. But if you go back and listen to the full way through our episode, there's a point where we're playing a clip of. Martin Sheen putting on a jacket and it was hilarious.
Oh, so great.
And so the next day, as I'm like sending out, like I sent out the Riker sitting down thing to my dad, and I sent out, and my dad, he's like 66. So he's been around long enough to, or 67, he's been around long enough to like have seen actors when they were a lot younger.
Yeah.
And so the Martin Sheen thing I sent to him with him putting on the coat, and he's like, yeah, his one of his arms is shorter than the other.
It's like a birth defect.
Yeah. His arm was like sat on or something. And we had no idea when we were talking about it on the show the last time. And
we
so
were too busy
and my
talking about how hilarious it was.
Right. Yeah. Just making fun of it. Like, why does he do that? Why is he doing that thing? And my dad's like, yeah, it's a birth defect that he has. And so I was like, and I'm like, oh, you're shitting me. He's like, look it up. And so I did. And there's a scene from a 70s era movie. I can't remember the name of the movie, but I linked it in our episode links where he puts on his jacket in the same way. It's almost a signature.
There aren't a whole lot of birth defects that make you look cooler.
That looks cooler.
That is one that you can kind of.
And I talked to Bruno about that. He has been acting. He acts in his day-to-day life. It's like a constant level of method acting because he presents himself in a way where he presents
that way.
He stands
Shut
and presents. Yeah, no, he presents himself in a way so that his arm actually looks the same length as his other, so he's in character
all the time. Like Truman Show status.
Yeah.
Oh.
Isn't that amazing?
That is really... Huh. I wonder at what point it stopped being...
Voluntary?
Yeah.
And it just became part of his, like...
became part of your...
Like, yeah, because there's ways that I do things now that it's just like...
exactly.
Like, I don't think about it.
I sit certain ways.
And I remember, and if I, right, if I think about it, if I try to think back far enough, there was a point in time where I was like, if I sit this way, I like this way that I sit for this reason.
It's a deliberate.
I did a deliberate thing once, and now it's,
himself.
Yeah.
This is my strong arm.
This is my short arm, so I'm going to make it look like it's the same length.
See how long just it is?
And it was, forced perspective.
It sticks down as far as my other arm does. So
he acts out
as long as
he acts out forced perspective.
Yes, that's exactly what
he
it is.
He is acting out forced. Forced.
If I stand like this, you can see that they both reach the same distance.
Right.
So clearly, they are both the same length.
Get used to that idea. Yeah.
I mean, I don't want it to. I don't want it to be like I'm making fun of the guy.
No, no, that's horrible. Not at all.
But
no,
that's really. I.
It's almost genius in a way.
What is the so in The Prestige, when they're studying the Asian magician and they can't figure out how he does the fishbowl trick? And the trick is that he pretends to walk crippled all the time so that he can hold the fishbowl in between his legs when he needs to. It's like the same thing. It's like, no, no, no. He really has a gimp arm. So he does this flourish to draw attention to the fact that he doesn't have a gimp arm.
Right. Yeah, no, he's...
Look how I can put my coat on. Nobody with a bad arm could do that.
Exactly.
Oh, shit.
Oh.
That's... No. Your dad showed you that?
He told me about it. Yeah, really, and so then I was...
That's really funny.
Then I went down a rabbit hole about it, and I was like, oh, there's a Reader's Digest interview from, like, 1992.
No shit.
Where he talks... All where he, like,
Martin
talks
Sheen's
about it.
Gimpy arm.
Where Sheen talks about it, yeah.
Huh. Okay. That's, man.
Bonkers.
So it's not just a thing that people found on the internet. It's a real...
No, yeah, like, and I really wonder if there's people that believe what we saw is just a phenomenon that has no ties to history.
Like,
because there are certain generations that come up and they're just like, oh, that's what he does. But they don't have any connection to...
I gesture to him like he's actually there sitting next to me, but it's like Chris was talking about with the chair thing with Riker.
Yeah.
He had a back injury, so that's how he had to sit on chairs, and so it just wound up being this big dick energy thing that his character did.
Yeah.
And this is something similar where it's like, well... We've got Martin Sheen and his gimpy arm. How could we possibly show it off that he doesn't have a gimpy arm? Well, what if he flirts?
Remember that movie where he puts his jacket on?
You know who?
Let's have him do that a thousand times.
You know what people with gimpy arms don't do is flourish their coats.
It was almost like he's a human pet trick kind of guy, or he's like.
Look what he can do.
What can you do that sets you apart?
What's your stupid human trick?
Aside from having Emilio and Charlie, I can do this with my coat.
I can put my coat on like this. How do you do that? Well, you see, the trick is you have to be born with an arm that's 4 inches too short. Oh, shit. Anyway.
Anyway, go listen to that previous episode.
No, Martin Sheen in his fucking coat.
Yeah. Falcon Winter Soldier.
I feel like it was both better than WandaVision as a whole, but also worse than WandaVision as a whole. It wasn't as cohesive as WandaVision was.
I would say
it was really kind of...
It was action-packed.
Scattery all over the place a little bit.
Yeah, when you put it into that perspective, I can see that. WandaVision did the shorter episodes.
Yeah.
And Falcon Winter Soldier did the longer
pacing,
form.
The pacing on episodes. Their episodes was bad. It was my biggest complaint about the show is...
There were some really fun scenes and interactions, especially when, like, Bucky was like, yeah, you're strong, or whatever he said.
I was going to say, the dialogue was fantastic. I didn't know how spoilery we wanted to get, but since you brought it up, I will go there. That was...
Yeah, spoilers the whole season.
Arguably my favorite part of the show was that fight scene right there. And John getting taken to, and Bucky just looking strong, John.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like that, for an action series, the character moments were the best parts.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, I'd say the dialogue was really well done in the in those strong scenes where they took the time.
That whole opening scene in the final episode where John is wrestling with what he's done and Sam and Bucky are like, yo, you need to give us the shield.
Mm-hmm.
That whole scene was top tier. Like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Really, really good.
Absolutely.
Shit. And then,
and I bought into him coming and helping them, and then it, but I bought into it in that it ended the way it did, where they kind of just left him to kind of fucking float.
I think it, if
they didn't take him in,
if you look at it from his character for the whole show, it can seem kind of jarring. But if you take
sure.
only the last episode into account and what he's trying to accomplish by doing it.
Right, right, right. He's trying to save face.
He's not their fucking friend.
Right.
He's doing it for himself.
Right. No, yeah. It's and, it's from and, a selfish perspective. Yeah. I want to watch a series. I said this in our chat. I go, I want to watch a John Walker series.
I want more of his character. It's they did a really
good
Wyatt
job Russell
with him.
is great, and he's got a lot of potential. I don't see him, like we talked about this last episode, I don't see him eclipsing his father.
No.
There's no possible way. Kurt's been in the game since before Wyatt Russell was.
And there's...
got started acting, age-wise.
There's too many... Kurt Russell has his own Mount Rushmore of...
Oh, yeah. And he's got movies. He's got movies that are top-tier, mid-tier, low-tier.
Yeah.
But they're all... But they're all
you're not,
definitively Kurt Russell.
You're not going to top that. You're just not.
Even okay, so here's a mid-tier Kurt Russell movie that I absolutely love, Breakdown. It's nothing special, nothing to write home about. But I get a it's not great writing. It's not a great story.
I would probably call it lower tier.
You think lower tier, huh?
Just because.
Well, compared to his body of work, yeah.
Yeah.
And okay.
Yeah.
When you compare it to his body of work, I would say lower tier. But I think.
It's really. It leans into its schlockiness really hard at times for no other reason than.
Other than to do so.
To do so.
Yeah. 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 JT Walsh is great in it.
No, there's some.
That's a guy that died too early.
There's good performances in it.
Yeah.
I mean, Kurt Russell isn't bad in it. And honestly, the...
Was it Kathleen Turner?
The...
No, it
was...
I can tell you in a minute. Kathleen Quinlan.
Yeah.
She hasn't done a lot. Since then, MC Gainey was in it. Jack Noseworthy, who I'd only ever seen since then in Something About Mary.
Oh, really? Dude, Event Horizon.
Rex Lynn. Oh, yeah. Rex Lynn, who's been in every fucking movie as a character actor ever.
He's always a cop.
Yeah.
No.
Even when he's not a cop, he's a cop.
It was... Again, it was schlock. It was something that came out in the 90s that was not designed to do anything but make a little bit of money. It wasn't a blockbuster. It wasn't a money pit. It was just another.
It was right in that.
That was like, hey, we made this movie and we made $20 million off of its budget. So,
what movie was it that he was in that he died in the opening scene?
Executive decision.
This is in that same
Steven Seagal.
Yeah,
and no, it was Steven Seagal that died in the opening scene.
Oh, was it Steven Seagal? Okay, yeah. See, that's how much I care about that movie,
dude. I'm glad you pulled that as fast as you did. So for
what year? What year was Executive Decision?
Oh God, 95 maybe. I saw that movie probably three times in the theater. Halle Berry.
96. So the same in like, yeah.
I was
so
12.
He's doing that. He's doing Breakdown. He's doing Soldier, because Soldier was what, 99, 98?
That was the movie that gave me my crush on Halle Berry.
Oh, I forgot she was even in that.
Yeah, she's the flight attendant. And
98, Soldier.
Yeah, so Soldier was on the back end of it. It was when he was starting to fade into obscurity. I read a really interesting deep dive article today about Steven Seagal and his... So I kind of wish that I had had the presence of mind to come up with what Steven Seagal did, because he uses a form of martial arts called Aikido.
Uh-huh.
And Aikido is primarily designed around using your opponent's momentum and inertia against them. So it also could be fair to say, describing it that way, that Aikido is martial arts designed for you to kick somebody's ass while exerting the absolute minimum amount of effort. Because you don't hit them, you just, oh, you let them, he's trying to hit me.
You let them fuck up on the way. Yeah.
And that's what Steven Seagal does.
That was, he sold my dad on that style. Like, my dad was like a big, like, he bought into, if there was a Steven Seagal, if there was a Steven Seagal stock that you could buy, my dad would have every penny of it during a period of time.
I could never figure out my stepdad, one of his favorite movies is Under Siege. And I could never figure out for the longest time why he liked it the way that it did, because it's just Tommy Lee Jones and Gary Busey chewing scenery while Steven Seagal pretends to fight people. And then I was watching these little retrospective things discussing the movies, and I was like, oh, that's exactly why it's enjoyable. It's because you've got Tommy Lee Jones and Gary Busey taking turns pretending who can chew the most scenery.
Oh, yeah.
And you have ponytailed, fat ass, useless Steven Seagal pretending to be a badass.
I'm just looking at Steven Seagal's filmography.
General Commander, apparently, that one that came out in 2019 that's up there where he plays the character Jack Alexander. Apparently, that is one that is worth checking out in terms of, like, okay, so did they just tell these people to run at Steven Seagal and then fall down? Because that's, like...
Yeah.
Yeah. That was that General Commander. That was one that they actually referenced in the article that I was reading.
Yeah, no, he hit his stride in like 94.
Well, so and there was that late 80s, early 90s.
Above the Law, Hard to Kill, Marked for Death.
Yeah.
All those, like, that was on what that was what ground. Sold my dad.
Out for Justice. Yeah.
And then Under Siege 2. And then I think it, the Glimmer Man. No, but after the Glimmer Man, it was done.
No, it was Under Siege was like his peak.
And
it
right.
just slowly went downhill from there to, oh, I'm starring in Exit Wounds with DMX because, niggle. but, no, there was this time period, and you were alive then, so you know it. In the late 80s, early 90s, where you had Jean-Claude Van Damme,
Stallone,
and Dolph Lundgren, and Stallone, and Arnold, and there was this...
They were all vying almost for the leading, to be that leading man, but they would also support one another.
It wasn't that it was a leading man thing, because you had Jackie Chan in there too.
And sure.
Even in like the early 2000s, you had Jet Li crowding in there too. It wasn't a... crowding around trying to be the leading man thing. It was a Arnold is your muscle quip guy, and Stallone is your muscle emotion guy, and Van Damme is your muscle splits guy, and Lundgren is your robot guy.
Right.
To be fair,
he's the smartest of the bunch.
He's the smartest of the bunch, but he's not the best actor. Like, he's probably the worst actor. You had Jackie Chan, who was your Asian. Like, you had all of these. None of them were vying for the same niche, but they were all vying for the same niche of, like, home video action movie entertainment.
That's where, yeah, you're...
Steven Seagal crowd his way into that with
little to no effort. About the same amount of effort that he puts into.
Watch his movies. Dudes run at him.
Yeah, and he's like,
that's the fucking movie. Dodge. I trip you. I trip you into him.
I trip you into him, yeah.
Like, that's his. And he has all of the there were some things that I was reading about in the article that I was reading that I haven't done a deep dive on yet, because I'm not ready to do my my Steven Seagal deep Russian state.
Not quite yet.
Like conspiracy beat. But apparently, if you look at Steven Seagal's body of work, there are a lot of people who funded his movies who have Russian names or ties to Russian companies and Russian people. And there are a lot of central, like, Eastern American ideals in his movies. Like, and again, you have them up here, so you can look at them if you scroll up. Above the Law, Hard to Kill, Marked for Death, Out for Justice, Under Siege. Under Siege is one.
Yeah.
Hard to Kill is one. On Deadly Ground is one. Executive Decision is one, where the bad guys are always the government. Mm-hmm. They're always rogue, covert American government operatives.
That is interesting.
The women are sex objects. The bad guys are secret Americans.
Well, what movie? And what movies? But these
are all their own action heroes. There's all of these things that you see very, very commonly in not just like Russian movies, but like Russian idealism of the 80s and the 90s of America.
Yeah, yeah.
That are all those movies are, is like, she is for sex. I will kill bad guy. Like,
as long as we fit in one sex scene.
Yeah. Here. Or even if it's not a sex scene, even if it's just a gratuitous topless scene.
Oh, yeah.
Because...
They'll throw in a few of those movie and then one sex scene.
Force those poor girls. One of the
worst sex scenes I can remember that still, like, scars me today is Assassins. I think it's Assassins with Stallone, and Sharon Stone. Stone. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When they're both like a good 15 years past their prime of when they were sex
banging
objects.
In the shower. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's it's rough to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. Antonio Banderas was in that one. I was surprised that they didn't have him. Because he has his little moment with Salma Hayek and Desperado.
Oh, yeah.
Was in like
94.
Yeah,
somewhere in that neighborhood.
No, that was...
But he was part of the... what movies series is it? Untouchables? No. Expendables.
That Expendables was Expendables out by then.
Oh, no. But he's part of that.
Yeah.
Grouping. He got lumped in with them. Because
all
of his.
And what's funny is he was never
in that group. Like, we wouldn't have grouped him
movies,
there.
He did movies with them.
Right.
But I would never have grouped him into the.
No. I had him in the Rodriguez movie pool before that.
Grouping of, you know, muscle heads of Stallone and Schwarzenegger and Carl Weathers and.
Lundgren.
Yeah. All, you know, even Jet Li to an extent.
Right. No, I wouldn't have put him in that grouping. And then they threw him in there. Like, almost like, It's like trading baseball cards, and they have like Bo Jackson, and like they got a bunch of baseball cards, and then they're like, also we have what's the guy's name that plays both? Well, Bo Jackson plays both sports, football and baseball.
Baseball, yeah.
Deion Sanders,
yeah.
Though like he was kind of like the Deion Sanders of the bunch, or the Bo Jackson of the bunch.
Yeah.
Because he could be versatile enough to play in both.
Well, he can actually act.
Yeah.
I mean, he's done some stuff that's really...
Zorro isn't bad.
Genuinely good. No, Zorro's not bad.
Or Mask of Zorro.
Catherine Zeta-Jones is... I never understood why she never got more popular.
Probably kids.
She was...
Because she's raising Michael Douglas's kids, and he's probably... I don't think he's a very... present father, given his older son's predilection for drug use.
She was talented. She was
right. Yeah,
you know, she had broke into being what you would consider like leading lady status.
What I've read was some of it was mental health based, and I would guess that probably she played a more active role in the raising of the children that she decided to have with Michael Douglas. That's my guess.
Nothing wrong with that.
No. But yeah, she's done stuff, but she hasn't hit like Oscar talk status. Like she hasn't been
No.
in the forefront of a lot of stuff.
No, she's never reached that level.
Yeah. So Wyatt Russell, basically we went on a slight deviation from Falcon Winter Soldier into a Kurt Russell filmography, subsequently into a Steven Seagal filmography. But Wyatt Russell in Falcon Winter Soldier, he brings it.
He's great.
Yeah.
He really is. He is a... Marvel does a really great job of getting villains that you... can hate but still get behind.
Right.
You can see their point.
The stuff where he's up there talking to his government and how he's like, yeah, you guys put me here.
That
like
this scene was great.
Powerful shit.
Very. Yeah. You built me to be this. And now you're like, it was really well done. That was I knew and they were really open about the fact that they were gonna be talking pretty exclusively about race and racial relations.
I had zero problems with it.
And for one, I had zero problems with it. But for two, I really, really enjoyed the way that they did it.
Zero problems. And the execution was done in such a way that it wasn't, it felt right.
It didn't feel ham-fisted or heavy-handed in any way when they were practicing throwing the shield and Bucky made the comment to Sam about how they never would have envisioned what it would mean or what it would be like for a black guy to take the shield and be Captain America. For one, that's really relevant commentary for our current times.
Oh yeah.
But for two, why would they have ever,
yeah.
Steve was frozen for the entirety of segregation and the fight for equal rights. And Bucky was a mind-controlled...
Super soldier
who didn't know fuck all about any of it.
Right.
They weren't going to know anything about that. I feel like they did a disservice... It was their first show to really tackle what had happened to the world after everybody got snapped back.
WandaVision did a little bit.
WandaVision showed it, but they really only had that one scene where Monica gets brought back in the hospital and the hospital is chaos.
Yeah,
and then everything else that you saw really just kind of dealt with what was going on with
Wanda and her taking the town captive and whatnot. Whereas this show, they had the Global Repatriation Council, the GRC, and that was who the Flag Smasher people were trying to fight against, because they had all of these issues about where people were going to be put after being displaced by the snap. I would have liked to see the show delve more into the world.
Yeah.
And less into, like, I get that it gives his character depth, and I understand.
It does, but it became more about, like, almost the political aspect of it than...
I understand the stuff with Sam and his sister and their history and their family boat and stuff. Like, I understood how that related to the discussion of legacy with Steve Shield, and like, right. I understood the correlation between it, but I would have liked maybe a little bit less of that and a little bit more of the real world ramifications of what was going on.
Oh yeah. Yeah, no,
because
I think
of, I mean, Zemo gets let out of prison in what, episode 3?
Yeah.
And yeah, he ends back up in Wakandan custody on the raft by the, you know, spoiler alert, sorry, by the end of the show. But at the same time, like, the SHIELD and the U.S. government and the, you know, the U.N., all they would all be, unless Wakanda's just going to be like, yeah, no, we got him, so he's here now. Like, they would all be looking for him. It a lot of the things that it felt like they did would have had larger scale ramifications than what they did in the show.
Right,
if that
right.
makes sense.
Yeah, no, yeah.
Not to say that I disliked it, because I did really like it, like, a lot. It's great.
Yeah. I personally, I'm looking forward to Loki, because I feel like they have a big playground to play within.
Yeah.
There.
There's a lot they can do,
because there's a little more sci-fi to play with. Mm-hmm. One.
I mean, they're already taking a character from an alternate timeline,
right? And, yeah, and then we've got
from there. So,
yeah, so we're in a different timeline altogether. Really,
there's a lot of stuff they can do with it. I'm glad to be getting more Loki, because he is one of the
Tim Hiddleston
characters
is.
He is one of the best characters that they have. The previews look good. The Disney Plus shows seem to be like because I don't know if you saw this, but they within 48 or 72 hours of the season finale, they announced that one of the guys that worked on Falcon and Winter Soldier is working on a script for Captain America 4.
I didn't, my son had talked to me a little bit about Captain America 4, and so Sam is supposed to be Captain America coming.
It's looking like they're going to continue the Captain America film series and have...
Which I prefer. Sam. I prefer I don't think I want to come back and visit the Falcon Winter Soldier universe or the Captain America Winter Soldier universe. I'd almost rather watch it in a trilogy. Or a new trilogy?
I would watch if they could come up with another kind of at least relatively contained.
Well, that's
series.
That's what
of,
I'm
of something that had to do with Falcon and Winter Soldier teaming up together.
Right.
I would watch it again, because I do like the characters together, but
I could see even a John Walker series with a reluctant Bucky.
Yeah.
Running in tow, too. Yeah. Like, I could see those two playing well off one another in a different way.
Totally. They both have an end mission that has a good result, but Bucky is the one who's like, no, we need to do this the right way, and Walker is the one who's like, no, we need to do this.
Right.
It could totally work.
Oh,
for sure.
It's one of the smart things that they do is the opportunities that they set themselves up with to extrapolate from.
Right. There's potential.
It's really smart writing across the board. If they could come up with something for the two of them to do together for a second season, I wouldn't be upset about it. But on the flip side of that, like, again, just a couple days after that, they announced that they were going to do a Captain America 4 movie. They could further the two of their story with that.
Well, with I was going to say within that franchise, they could easily work Bucky into that too.
They're doing the Netflix show Armor Wars that has to do with Don Cheadle and the like Tony Stark armor that's left over in the world after he dies.
They're doing a Netflix show?
Or did I say Netflix?
Yeah.
I meant Disney Plus.
I was going to say why?
No,
like,
not Netflix. Disney Plus.
It's like that makes no sense to me. I thought Netflix gave up all their Marvel.
No, Disney Plus. But I could see Bucky being a part of that.
Integral to that, yeah.
You know, that he's still working with the
government. Well, and they kind of laid the groundwork for a future Falcon, too, with that, what's the guy's name, that was like, hey, you left you want the wings?
And he's keep them. His assistant guy. And they also, with the stuff with Sharon being the power broker or whatever at the end of Falcon and Winter Soldier, left it open where she was like working with the government and selling government secrets. Well, that works perfectly into the Armor Wars idea of the wrong people getting a hold of Star Trek stuff. Like they do. It's one of the things that I've voiced it since, I think probably Civil War now, is I don't understand why people question Marvel at this point.
They seem to always have a plan in mind, and whether it's your plan or not, they have a plan.
They know what they're doing.
And their execution seems to be pretty solid.
Yeah. It's a lot more
thought out.
It's a lot more good than bad. They know what they're doing, and there's an awful lot of things that you would not think about that wind up tying into or being, they've got a plan.
Yeah.
And I can understand the idea behind, well, eventually they're going to make something that's not going to work. Like I can understand that idea because that logic is sound. I mean, you can't be 100% 100% of the time.
Well, can't you argue that that's Captain Marvel?
Again, they've already done it. Captain Marvel, the first Thor movie. Thor movie. They've already had what you would consider misses in terms of overall
that still
quality.
Fit within the universe.
That still work.
Yeah, yeah.
Even their bad stuff still works. So why would you? Why doubt them at this point?
Right.
Like I really, I.
No,
did
they
the Falcon
have.
And Winter Soldier deliver on everything that I wanted it to? No, it didn't. It was a lot slower than I expected it to be. I was expecting an action series.
They sold it as an action series.
Yes. But that doesn't change the fact that I still thought it was fucking great. And
no, I think it was definitely well done. I mean, I have a 13-year-old, almost 14-year-old that loved it.
Yeah.
Every minute of it. And so, and it wasn't all built on action. So, I mean, they're building it. I think they're doing it right, because if they're building it to a demo that still sells to that age group, then I think they're doing something right.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, peeps, didn't I tell you this was the best one? They fucking nailed it as usual. In case you weren't listening at the beginning, make sure you head over to timespentpoorly.com and click things. Give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. While you're at it, subscribe on YouTube and get notified the next time we're live. Maybe you appreciate what we give you and you want to support us? Great! Head over to patreon.com/timespentpoorly and check out how you can do just that. Thanks again for wasting your time with us this week. Now go make better use of it! Until next time.
This commercial break of the Time Spent Poorly program is brought to you by Faygo brand soda. Faygo, do you need a generic store brand bought soda? Then send your mama straight up to the store and tell that bitch to bring home some Faygo.